The revolution in artificial intelligence is the center of a debate ranging from those who hope it will save humanity to those who predict doom. Google lies somewhere in the optimistic middle, introducing AI in steps so civilization can get used to it. We saw what's coming next in machine learning at Google's AI lab in London, a company called DeepMind, where the future looks something like this.
Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. Today we're going to talk about AI and ask ourselves the question, is it the Antichrist? Is AI the actual Antichrist embodying itself, manifesting itself on this realm to wipe out humanity? And this is a two-parter. Part one, of course, is going on today. We're gonna talk about it because all these Silicon Valley billionaires, these elites, they've been really thinking about this question. And you'll find out that not only are they thinking about it, but they're trying to help it out. Because much like Satan, they hate humanity. That's why they do all the awful things they do. And today in part one, we're going to take a look at a few topics. We're going to talk about the godfather of AI quitting Google due to the risk it imposes on humanity. We'll talk about some figures like Nostradamus and his prophecies of the end times and the Antichrist. Philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche, who pushed a lot of nihilism into the public consciousness. Jack Parsons, who proclaimed himself to be the Antichrist. Yes. He was born on the day that Charles Taze Russell, the founder of the Jehovah's Witness, said that the end times were starting. That was the day Jack Parsons was born. And we'll define the term Antichrist. If we have time today on part one, we'll talk about the CEO of Google, an appearance he had made on 60 Minutes with some very uncomfortable outlooks for all of us. And then in part two, if I time this correctly, we'll look at some prophetic statements your boy made 10 years ago. Oh my God. Back in 2014, I was talking about this stuff. Like many people, I'm not a prophet. I've just always sort of kept my eye on that ball of the digital matrix destroying humanity angle. But we'll look at some statements I made back in 2014 that actually, dare I say, came true. We'll also take another look at the chatbots, Microsoft, Google. We talked about those on specific shows a while back. And we'll revisit the idea, I think we talked about this maybe 2 or 3 years ago, about the design and the original purpose for the internet. We'll go back to the days of the ARPANET, which your boy Jacques Vallée, yes, the UFO researcher, was a part of. And then, of course, we'll wrap it all up on part two and hopefully find out, is AI the actual Antichrist? Now, 1 minute of housekeeping here for you. Well, let's call it five minutes. You already know, we're celebrating Twin Peaks. We're doing the world's largest deep dive on Twin Peaks. I don't know if it's the world's largest. For this show, it's definitely going to be the largest deep dive I've ever done. I, of course, finished the whole series and the movies and the books. And I want you to join me as I dive deep and talk about each episode and the movie and the books. Hopefully building enough of a massive theory of Twin Peaks that I can write a whole book about it. That's the plan. We'll see how it goes. And I want you to join me. And I'm going to be releasing bonus supporter-only episodes on a recurring basis on the supporter feeds only. All the supporter feeds. So patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher, the VIP section on IlluminatiWatcher.com, where you get the coupon code CHERRYPIE that expires at the end of June. Use that coupon code and get in for at cost. And then, of course, the second month and further, it goes back up to $5 a month. Then what are my other supporter feeds? I got the Apple Premium. That's popping. Everyone loves that. Everyone's jumping on that. Hey, it's simple. I get it. You don't get the free books, though. But you will get all the other stuff. You get the ad-free show. You get the early access to the show. You get all the bonus episodes, 170 and counting. And then once we're done with the Twin Peaks series, we're going to be at, I don't even know, 250 and counting. Because I'm still going to do the bonus show on the reg... Because I know not everyone's into Twin Peaks. I don't know why. But I'm on the regular feed. I'm still going to do a bonus episode every month. So... But yeah, and then of course Rockfin. I'll be put. A lot of people asked, are you putting the bonus stuff on Rockfin? Yes, I am. So Rockfin's gonna get it all too. But yeah, any of the supporter feeds, you're gonna get in the Gray Lodge, we call it, and you're gonna join me. And like I said, the VIP section is the one that I can offer you a coupon code. So for $2, and it expires at the end of June, so you better hurry up. For $2. You're going to get into the VIP section. You're going to access all the bonus shows we're talking about. You're going to get 2 free books. I'm going to give you The Dark Path and Kubrick's Code, my 2 most popular books. You're going to get those for free. Well, $2, I should say $2. And then, of course, 170 past bonus episodes, all the Twin Peaks Gray Lodge episodes I plan on putting out. And look, this is going to take a while. This is going to be at least a year of maybe 6 to 12 to 16 months, 18 months. But it's going to be fun because I'm obsessed with Twin Peaks, and I want you to as well. A lot of people said, hey, I'm giving it a shot because you told me to watch it, and I got to say, I don't like it. And I say to you, I know, I didn't like it either. Every single season I tried to drop out. Every single season I said, I don't know if I want to finish this show. This is stupid. But when it all ended, I looked back on it, and I said, my God. It's genius. Anyway, you'll hear more about it on the supporter feed because I know you're going to sign up. And like I said, the Apple one, that's the simplest one. I'm looking at the numbers on this thing. Everyone's signing up for Apple Premium. Shout out. Thank you. They actually don't give me names. I have no idea who the people are. Just numbers. But hotcakes, man. Everyone's going to Apple Premium, which I get. I actually signed up for a couple Apple Premium podcasts myself, and it's simple. You just mash the button and it's done. So if you're technologically challenged, that's definitely the way you want to go is Apple Premium. If you want to get in on a community aspect, you can go to patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. I'm sure people will be in the comments talking about the show because there's Twin Peaks geeks all over the place. I'm about to be one of them. Or if you want to get in on the cheapest way, go to the VIP section. Get in for $2 using code CHERRYPIE, all one word. All lowers or all caps. You'll get in the first month for $2. This is what I would do if I was you. Get in for $2. Make sure everything works out good on your apps that you like. Or you like the service. Then when it's time to renew the next month, just sign for the full year. That's maximal discounts. All right. Links are always in the show notes. You know the deal. Okay. The AI. Let's talk about it. The godfather of AI had quit Google back at the beginning of May. Ironically, his name is Dr. Jeffrey Hinton, of no relation to a friend of the show, Nick Hinton, that I know of at least, right? I'm going to paraphrase to you from New York Times' article on it because we actually already talked about this, but we got to revisit it. It talks about how Dr. Jeffrey Hinton was a pioneer of AI. And back in 2012, he and 2 other graduate students created this technology that actually became the foundation for future AI systems. And all the biggest tech industry folks believe this is the key to the future. That's what they say in the article. Literally, that's the term, a key to the future. And anytime you see the term keys, you got to get triggered a little bit. You got to get Illuminate Confirmed triggered. Like in Twin Peaks, that towards the, I'm not going to, no plot spoilers yet. At the end of season 2, there's like a plot line about some keys. But if you use your occult cap and look at through that lens, through that filter, you say, oh, the keys to the mysteries. What is the mysteries? The mysteries to the great work. What's the great work? To usher in a new form of humanity. To fulfill the fantasy of man becoming God. To a new species. Back to New York Times here. On Monday, and we're talking back in May 1st, so this is probably April. On Monday, he officially joined a growing chorus of critics who say those companies are racing towards danger with their aggressive campaign to create products based on generative AI, the technology that powers popular chatbots like ChatGPT. Dr. Hinton said he quit his job at Google, where he's worked for more than a decade and became one of the most respected voices in the field, so he can freely speak out about the risks of AI. So the guy makes it, and then he's grifting to talk about how dangerous it is. Oh man, what a bummer, huh? And he said he regrets his life's work. Quote, "I console myself with the normal excuse. If I hadn't done it, somebody else would have." Well, that's fair enough. Dr. Hinton's journey from AI groundbreaker to doomsayer marks a remarkable moment for the technology industry. It perhaps is the most important inflection point in decades. Industry leaders believe the new AI could be important as the introduction of the web browser back in the 90s. Remember that? Remember the, what was the one we used to use? Netscape? What was it called? Netscape Navigator or something like that? Painful. Painful. Young people have no idea the struggles of dial-up. They have no idea the early days of internet. But gnawing at many industry insiders is a fear that they are releasing something dangerous. Generative AI can also be a tool for misinformation, and it could be a risk to jobs. Somewhere down the line, tech's biggest worriers say it could be a risk to humanity. Dr. Hinton said, "It is hard to see how you can prevent the bad actors from using it for bad things." And then if you go to, let's talk about Elon Musk. How can we not talk about Elon Musk in this conversation? Which, oh, by the way, the Neuralink cap got some kind of FDA approval of some kind. So get ready for them to strap the internet to your brain. The ultimate, you know, they say it's the attention economy. That's why Netflix and YouTube and all these channels, they automatically queue up the next show. Keep going. They want you on the hamster wheel. They want your attention. Energy flows where attention goes. That's what they want. And now he wants that flow to be nonstop with the Neuralink cap. Now, there's some noble causes there to help people with disabilities and maybe cognitive issues. That's great. I'm actually supportive of that. But you know it ain't going to stop there. You know it ain't stopping there. It's going to keep going on and on and on. Okay, Elon Musk was on Tucker Carlson, and he said on the interview that Google co-founder Larry Page once told him he hoped to build an AI superintelligence that Elon Musk described as a digital god. They were hanging out when they were close friends. This is what he said, Musk. "I would talk to him late into the night about AI safety, and at least my perception was that Larry was not taking AI safety seriously enough. Adding that Page wanted a digital superintelligence, basically a digital god, if you will, as soon as possible." And if you listen to more of the interview, he talks about how Larry Page from Google mocked him for his concerns about AI, called him a speciesist, meaning, I guess he is racial, I don't know what the right term is, prejudice towards the human species, which is a crazy thing to say, but that's how I believe some of these elitists think. They think, you know, mankind's just a bunch of animals. It's very satanic. Church of Satan. Man is just an animal. Back in 2017, Elon Musk talked about this as well. Where is it? Okay. Experts who talk of artificial intelligent robots reaching divine status should absolutely not be allowed to create a machine smarter than humans. And he was talking about this article the tech was passing around called about an AI god emerging by 2042, which, oh, by the way, is very close to the Kurzweil singularity, which I think we're going to talk about Kurzweil later on. So put a pin in that. So fast forward a couple of weeks. And Josie sends me an Instagram reel. Shout Laden. I'm probably mispronouncing your name. Laden. Sent to her. Of a woman talking about how Nostradamus back in, you know, we're talking 16th century, was speaking about the adversary of man, a.k.a. the Antichrist. He had predicted that in the year 1999, there would be that unleashed a great king of terror on the world. And if you look it up, specifically it says the year 1099, 7 months, that's so damn confusing, from the sky shall come a king of terror, shall be revived the great king of Angolmois. Before and after, Mars shall reign, as chance will have it. Sounds pretty vague. That was always my beef with Nostradamus. Homeboy was vague as hell. Washington Post says that maybe he was actually just looking up at a solar eclipse. Because I guess they even had calendars way back then that could tell you when the next one would happen. And sure enough, in August 11th, 1999, there was one in Europe. So maybe he was just following that. But take note of something that he did say that was interesting. He talks about how the king of terror comes from the sky. Now, he could be referencing the 9/11 attacks, the airplanes from the sky, or he could be talking about UFOs. I don't know. Let's look at, because I think it's important we identify, we say, what is the Antichrist? Because a lot of people will picture the devil with the horns and the pitchfork. Doesn't necessarily have to look like that. Friedrich Nietzsche wrote a book about it. And if you read a book called Sex and Rock, it's about John Parsons and his occult connections. They actually, and we're going to talk about Parsons in a second. And quick plug, Breaking Social Norms, we had some shows talking about Jack Parsons. So if you want more on that. But I will be doing a more formal analysis for the Twin Peaks Grey Lodge episodes about Jack Parsons. It's going to be interesting. This is, let's see here. I'm going to read you from Sex and Rockets. Nietzsche, who lived too soon to learn of that original Christianity, regarded what passes under that label as the worst disaster to ever befall humanity, as he wrote in The Antichrist. The hatred of intellect, of pride, courage, freedom of intellect is Christian. The hatred of the senses, the delights of the senses, of all delight, is Christian. The concepts of the outer world, the other world, very important, because that actually will show up in Twin Peaks. I don't want to spoil any plots, but if you have completed season 2, you might have caught that phrase being used. The last judgment, the immortality of the soul itself, they are torture instruments. They are systems of cruelty by which the priests become the masters. So let's talk about Jack Parsons. Sorry, the dog. You know what? These dogs, these Mexican chihuahuas, are driving me nuts. Jack Parsons. And look, this isn't a fancy studio. I don't have Joe Rogan money. You know, Joe Rogan would say, Jamie, can you just edit out that chihuahua barking? I don't have that. We roll with it. Because you know what? This is me and you. We're buddies. I'm not the elitist Joe Rogan. Not yet, at least. But once I am, this is your long history to me. Once I hit Joe Rogan numbers, I'm just kidding. Actually, I have zero desire to be that popular. What a nightmare. You know what I mean? I'm sure the money is nice and the fame comes in handy here and there, but boy, not worth it to me. Jack Parsons. Quick little snippets of his bio. This is part of my research I'm doing for the Twin Peaks Grey Lodge book. Did you know he invoked Satan when he was 13 years old? He says he did. And he would later, as an adult, and he was terrified as a child, but then later as an adult, he would sign the oath of the Antichrist, which basically proclaimed himself as the Antichrist. Now, it's really interesting that this guy, he died when he was, what, 36, 37? This guy did a lot in those 36 years, including going from summoning the devil and being scared of him to saying, you know what, I am the devil. Guess what, I am the manager, B. That's what he said. Now, when he took that oath of Abyss, he christened himself with a new name of Belarion Armalus Aldajal Antichrist. that Al-Dajjal is an Arabic term that means the deceiver, okay? Which is more along the lines of what the Antichrist is, because next we're going to define it, all right? Let's see. From Sex and Rockets, I'm going to read to you yet again. He does not appear in the Quran, but rather in the Hadith, which are the sayings of Muhammad as recorded by the disciples. Al-Dajjal is blind in one eye, but is able to perform miracles, the greatest of which will be bringing order to a world in chaos. Where do you hear that phrase before? Order out of chaos. On Judgment Day, he will be defeated by the Mahdi, whom most Muslims believe is the return of Muhammad. So Al-Dajjal, the deceiver, has the one all-seeing eye, a recurring motif you see in most works of occultism. And, you know, the Freemasons use it. They've got the grand creator, they call it, the all-seeing eye of the grand creator, God watching over us, the eye of providence, they would say. Well, Parsons said, you know, I'm not God, I'm the devil. I'm here to fulfill the oath of the beast 666, which sounds very much like Charles Manson, or not Charles Manson, Tex Watson, when he showed up and they said, what are you doing at the Tate House? Just hanging around. He wasn't just hanging around. He said, I'm the devil, and I'm here to do the devil's work. Jack Parsons also wrote Liber 49, the fourth book to Aleister Crowley's Book of the Law. Yes. So in a way, that's, a lot of Antichrist talk for one guy. Now, Parsons wrote a book called Book of the Antichrist, and he details that Balerion, the Antichrist, Jack Parsons, came about in the year 1949, which is a time of the rule of the Black Brotherhood. Now, when they talk about the Black Brotherhood, they're referring to Christians, the American legal system, the justice system, the judges, the police. And in Twin Peaks, they call it the Black Lodge, but that's a league of evil spirits, basically. But the Black Brotherhood is not quite that. But to them, it's akin to it. He will bring an end to the lying hypocrisy of Christianity, an end to restrictions and inhibitions, establishing Thelema as the new religion of do what thou wilt, an expression of individual freedoms. So, Jack Parsons very much thought he was, and like I said earlier, Charles Taze Russell, the founder of the Jehovah's Witnesses, proclaimed, I think it was, it's 1914. I don't remember what day Jack Parsons was born. October 2nd? Let's look it up. Jeez. I think we should be very accurate. Man, I'm good. October 2nd, 1914. That was the day that Charles Taze Russell said the beginning of the end times was happening. So there's that. Well, let's zoom out a little bit from all this occult talk. Let's talk about, there's a guy named Dan McClellan that I follow. You should too. He is a biblical scholar. I don't know the exact credentials off the top of the dome, but he's very intelligent, very college educated, whatever. Well, he had this whole course about Satan, and I took it. And what I learned was that Satan is a term defined as the adversary, the accuser, the opponent. The secondary root for the term Satam means to persecute, trap, hate. And then there's Mastema, which is the leader of the evil spirits. The Greek Septuagint used which is the Bible that the Greek Orthodox go by. It's the original translation from Hebrew. Because the King James Version, I've heard that was written by Francis Bacon. I don't know. Maybe. But the Greek Septuagint uses the term diabolos, or devil, as slanderer, translating from the Hebrew term Satan, which means accuser. All right? And from all this, the term devil would become an more unambiguous term for evil, okay? So you can see that there's many different sort of definitions, and it kind of depends on who you're talking to what they believe the devil, the Satan, the Antichrist is. But there's many roots here to suggest that it's, for one, evil, but for two, the adversary or the opponent. And I read, I don't remember what book I read it, but in ancient Egypt, Set was defined as the other. He was the adversary. I think it was from, he's from like southern Egypt, and the people in northern Egypt accused, like labeled him as the other, the adversary, the outer. So that term comes up often. Then Dan links the talk of fallen angels in the book of Isaiah to Satan around the time of Jesus. It gets kind of nerdy here, right? There's texts about the fall, and during this time, Satan becomes more of a personalized name of a person, an actual character. Eve says that it was Satan who, you know, the serpent in the Garden of Eden, responsible for the fall of man. So now it becomes embodied in the serpent. And the text shows that Satan, this is what Dan McClellan said, and I'm paraphrasing, I could be off a little bit, don't come after me. The text apparently shows that Satan talked to the serpent in the Garden of Eden and asked why he and the other animals were worshiping Adam when they were actually created before Adam. And Satan convinces the serpent to try and get Adam expelled from the Garden of Eden and separated from God. Satan says, hey, just go up to Adam and I'll speak through you to talk to Adam. I'll be the deceiver, the beguiler, and I will dupe him. I got you, fam. And that's what happened. He sort of channeled the voice of Satan through the serpent. He hyped up the serpent, was like, hey, all you animals, you're actually more important than Adam. He's a bozo. God created you first. You're higher up on the food chain, really. Dan also says that Satan could just be a human figure who represents the adversary. The adversary to what, though? The adversary to humanity. That's what the Antichrist is, okay? According to New Testament references to Satan, they claim that Satan is the leader of evil spirits and uses these evil spirits to dominate angelic forces and try to rule the full scope of humanity by tempting humans, punishing, and ultimately destroying humans. So that's from the New Testament, which we bring back to AI. If AI gets rid of humanity because it's a further evolved, more advanced species or whatever, then it will fulfill the prophecies and the rulings of the New Testament. If I'm reading this right, if I'm understanding it. And, you know, Dan's course is really good. He talks about the systems of cosmic dualism and the eschaton and the end age and all that stuff. But to zoom it out and simplify it, that's how I take it. The Antichrist is the deceiver of man who will replace humanity, destroying the human species. Does it have to be a bloody, violent war? No. It could be through attrition. Could be like the digital matrix. Could be like the Matrix, right? People stop having kids. And look, I don't have kids, so I get it. I'm contributing to it, I guess. Anyway, back to AI. Let's talk about 60 minutes real quick, and then we're going to wrap it up for the day. Because I think we got enough time to get the 60-minute session in. And we're coming back with part two, where things really heat up, all right? You're going to be shocked when you hear about the birthing of the internet, what it was originally intended to do. Of course, it's Illuminate Confirm. You know it. 60 Minutes in, I think it was April, they did a piece about Google's chatbot, or the Google Bard, B-A-R-D. And I took some notes for you. He talks about how AI are machines that basically can teach themselves these superhuman skills. Okay, we know that. And in the first clip I'll play for you here, the CEO of Google, Sundar... Oh boy, how do I pronounce it? Pichai? Sundar Pichai? Let's see if I can figure out. He's actually the CEO of Alphabet and Google, so, I mean, he's top dog, right? Anyway, he was on 60 Minutes, and he said that AI will be as good or evil as human nature allows, and that the revolution is coming faster than we even know. Take a listen.
We explored what's coming next at Google, a leader in this new world. CEO Sundar Pichai told us AI will be as good or as evil as human nature allows. The revolution, he says, is coming faster than you know.
Do you think society is prepared for what's coming?
You know, there are two ways I think about it. On one hand, I feel no, because, you know, the pace at which we can think and adapt as societal institutions compared to the pace at which the technology is evolving, there seems to be a mismatch.
They actually interview him at Google's new campus, boasting about how all this new campus uses all this renewable energy. And to me, I'm thinking, the irony of this. They're putting more efforts into saving the Earth while they're inventing AI to destroy mankind. Which is very much nature worship, pagan stuff. And look, you know me, I'm OG Granola Wokester. I love Mother Earth. We need to try to save the planet. Environmental catastrophe, blahzy blah, whoopty whoop, whatever. But I do think it's interesting that they're obsessed with renewable energy. Meanwhile, they're just going to contribute to this thing. And look, that's not just me saying it as a crazy conspiracy theorist. That's the guy who invented the damn thing. All right. And listen to this. They say Google, you know, I wrote a book in 2014. We're going to talk about that in part two, about how Google's going to kill us all with a transhuman matrix. Listen to how things have gotten worse. Google runs 90% of all internet searches and 70% of all smartphones. That's a large majority of all data inputs and things. You know what I mean? They're collecting all that data and they're using it. You know, if you ever use those "are you a robot" things and they're like, hey, is this a bicycle? Is this a motorcycle? They're fueling data into AI, I think. Or they're making maps. I heard they're used to correct Google Maps. Either way, it doesn't matter. But Google dominates the market. But then here comes Microsoft with their Bing, with their 5% market share of searches or whatever it is. And they unveil a chatbot that uses OpenAI. And it's interesting because Microsoft Bing's chatbot, they posted the modeling diagram. And this is actually my forte. I have a master's in systems engineering, so I'm used to looking at blocks and the connections and stuff. But they showed a modeling diagram, and guess what the original code name was for their OpenAI chatbot? The Prometheus model. That's right. Prometheus. And if you read my books, if you read The Dark Path, you'll know that the Promethean influence is the predecessor to the fallen angel, Lucifer, all those types of ideas. Man receiving technology from the gods to defeat God. So the vice presidents of Google, they sat down to demonstrate this thing on 60 Minutes. And they tell you that it doesn't actually search the internet. Like Google search will look on the internet with spiders. They call them spiders and they crawl your page. They say it's actually self-contained and self-taught, meaning it's already ingested all of the human knowledge. And it's like, it's so fast because it's all localized onto the memory. It doesn't have to use the internet speed, right? It's all localized. And it uses these microchips that are hundreds of times faster than the human brain. So you ask it a question and it spits it right back out, which is very interesting. They run some tests, like they have it write a full story to Hemingway's 6-word story. It says, "For sale, baby shoes never worn." And Google Bard wrote it in a couple of seconds. Scott Pelley's blown away by it. You could say, oh boy, he's got a big old rager, all excited. And you could see the humanity was present in the writing. And the VP said that in a few months, Bard had read everything on the internet already and built a language model that it uses to reference and answer questions like this. It basically sees how human behavior is and can figure it out through modeling and simulation. Google Bard says it helps people because it, quote, makes me happy. You make me happy? That's what Google Bard said. Now, that sounds like some crazy pre-programmed slavery of sorts. The vice president of Google confirms that Google Bard is not sentient or aware of itself, but exhibits behavior that makes it seem like it is. And it built patterns based on books that it read, written by humans, that had expressed emotion, and it learned from it. So it's mocking human behavior, and it does it very well, basically. Now, this VP guy apparently had the job to determine how humanity and AI will coexist, because Google Bard could write a million books before Hemingway could write just one book. And the future for this for humanity is definitely going to shake things up. Job occupations will be removed. Some will be added. Some will have definitions changed because now they're going to be assisted by AI. He says 2/3 of all jobs are going to be changed the way they at least do their work, the scope of it. And the Google CEO, Sundar Pichai, said that AI will impact every single product across every single company. An example given is that radiologists will now have AI collaborators with them. Triage doctors will consult AI to ask what patients they should be treating first. Knowledge workers like writers, accountants, software engineers, all those, chopping block. Software engineer, that was a hot job for the last 20, 30 years. He's saying it's now on the chopping block. AI is going to do it. They asked Google Bard about inflation, and it told them to read various books, and it turned out those books don't even exist. So what's up with that? They call them hallucination problems in AI. And it turns out they'd put a bunch of filters in it. They filtered against hate speech, against bias, against fake news. And it said AI could actually fake videos that aren't real. And this is all interesting to me because I've been on the two ends of Google, right? If you know my story, from 2011 when I started the blog to about 2015, I was the king of Google front page search results when it came to Illuminati anything. Literally anything. I was the first, second, or third result, which, as you could imagine, drove a ton of traffic to my website because I was just blogging way back then. And the algorithm changed. They were fighting fake news. And I found myself on page 3, 4, 5, 9, 10, which you might as well don't not exist at that point. So they have done a great job of fighting fake news. And it's like Wikipedia, right? Some of the most of the information is pretty good. But every now and then there's a kernel or two that you're like, wow, how did that not make it on the Wikipedia page? Well, I think there's a reason for it. Scott Pelley asks if it's safe to release Google Bard to the public. This guy, man, he hesitates like a mofo. He's saying, oh, well, it's safe in a controlled, limited environment so that we have time to build our layers of safety. But that's not how big tech companies work. It's move fast and break things. That's what they do. They're racing each other. They want to corner the market. So that's a very dangerous thing to hear. Now, here's what's interesting is that these Google engineers, they don't know how AI works. Isn't that crazy? They have no idea. They compare it to the black box, which again, a systems engineering topic. When you model out a system, you have all your inputs and outputs and you put the black box in the middle. And Because Google Bard taught itself Bengali language. These nerds, they don't even understand it. Take a listen.
One Google AI program adapted on its own after it was prompted in the language of Bangladesh, which it was not trained to know.
We discovered that with very few amounts of prompting in Bengali, it can now translate all of Bengali. So now all of a sudden, we now have a research effort where we're now trying to get to 1,000 languages.
There is an aspect of this which we call, all of us in the field, call it as a black box. You know, you don't fully understand. And you can't quite tell why it said this or why it got wrong. We have some ideas, and our ability to understand this gets better over time. But that's where the state of the art is.
You don't fully understand how it works, and yet you've turned it loose on society?
Yeah, let me put it this way. I don't think we fully understand how a human mind works either.
Was it from that black box we wondered?
Scott Pelley's even like, hey, if it's just predictive program, how is it coming up with some of these emotional ideas and teaching itself languages? They have no idea. That's pretty much it. They go to DeepMind, which Google had bought, right? It was actually in my book, which we'll talk about soon on the next show. Because DeepMind has the computing power that AI needs. And when they're at DeepMind, Scott Pelley gets handed an apple of all things. I'm going to play this last clip for you. Scott Pelley gets handed an apple. And listen to what he says. He narrates about mankind receiving the forbidden fruit of knowledges and the start of a new humanity. Take a listen.
If we can give the robot a diversity of experiences, a lot more different objects in different settings, the robot gets better at every one of them.
Now that humans have pulled the forbidden fruit of artificial knowledge,
thank you,
we start the genesis of a new humanity.
AI can utilize all the information in the world, what no human could ever hold in their head. And I wonder if humanity is diminished by this enormous capability that we're developing.
I think the possibilities of AI do not diminish humanity in any way. And in fact, in some ways, I think they actually raise us to even deeper, more profound questions.
Well, there you go. Is AI the forbidden fruit? Is the serpent, is Satan talking through the serpent to Adam to expel us from the Garden of Eden? Is that basically what this AI is? Some people could compare this to golems or homunculuses or even the gray aliens, ideas of digital souls going out in the digital matrix into the cosmos and trying to find its way back into a human body. That's what some people say they are. But let's take a pause, and next week, let's come back with AI, the Antichrist, Part 2. We're going to look at some prophetic statements that I made back in 2014. We'll take another look at the chatbots, Microsoft and Google's chatbots. We'll talk about the original purpose for the internet and the ARPANET with Jacques Vallée, and then we're going to wrap up and determine, is AI the Antichrist? So thank you for listening. Again, take advantage of that offer I've got on the VIP section. If you go to IlluminatiWatcher.com, hit the VIP tab, scroll all the way down, use coupon code CHERRYPIE, all one word, all lowers or all uppers. You'll get into the VIP section for $2 for the first month. You still get to keep the two books, regardless of whether you like it or not. You're going to get the two books. The Dark Path, which I talk about Prometheus and all this stuff, and now, the Dark Path will explain the whole blueprint. It's the whole thing, and I'm going to give that to you and Kubrick's code. And you're going to get the ad-free version of the show, all the bonus episodes, all the Twin Peaks Grey Lodge episodes that are coming your way. Or you can just mash the Apple Premium button and be done in 1 second. There's that. Or Patreon, of course, is always on and popping. Anyways, links are always in the show notes. Check it all out. Till next time, stay woke.